Chapter 9. Your Excellency.
Ah, my dear boy, it's all over. It's all settled,
he pronounced in a tragic half-whisper. Uncle, I said, I heard shouts and uproar.
Yes, my boy, shouts there were, shouts of all sorts. Mama is in a swoon, and everything is upside down now. But I have made up my mind, and shall insist on my own way. I am afraid of no one now, Seryozha. I want to show them that I, too, have a will of my own, and I will show them. And so I have sent for you on purpose that you may help me show them. My heart is broken, Seryozha, but I ought, I am bound to act with severity. Justice is inexorable.
But whatever has happened, Uncle?
I am parting with Foma,
my uncle pronounced in a resolute voice. Uncle, I cried, delighted, you could have thought of nothing better, and if I can assist in any way to carry out your decision, make use of me, now and always.
Thank you, my boy, thank you, but now it is all settled. I am waiting for Foma. I have already sent for him. Either he or I, we must part. Either Foma leaves this house tomorrow, or I swear I'll throw up everything and go into the hussars again. They will take me and give me a division, away with all this bobbery. A fresh start in every way now.
What have you got that French exercise book for? He cried furiously, addressing Gavrila.
Away with it! Burn it! Stamp on it! Tear it to pieces! I am your master, and I order you not to learn French. You can't disobey me. You dare not, for I am your master, and not Foma Fomitch.
I thank thee, O Lord, Gavrila muttered to himself.
Evidently things had got beyond a joke.
My dear, my uncle went on, with deep feeling. They are asking me the impossible. You shall decide. You stand between me and them now as an impartial judge. You don't know what they have insisted on my doing. You don't know, and at last they have formally demanded it. They have spoken out. But it's repugnant to humanity, to decent feeling, to honour. I will tell you all about it, but first,
I know about it already, Uncle, I cried, interrupting him. I can guess. I have just been talking to Nastasia Yevgrafovna.
My dear, not a word of that now,
he interrupted me hurriedly, as though he were frightened.
I will explain about it later on, but meanwhile,
well, he cried to Vido Pliasov, who walked in,
where is Foma Fomitch?
Vido Pliasov entered with the information that Foma Fomitch did not wish to come, and considered that the insistence on his doing so was rude to the point of impertinence, so that his honour, Foma Fomitch, was greatly offended by it.
Bring him! Drag him! Fetch him here! Drag him here by force!
Cried my uncle, stamping. Vido Pliasov, who had never seen his master in such a rage, retreated in alarm. I was surprised. Something very important must have happened, I thought, if a man of his character is capable of being moved to such wrath and such determination. For some moments my uncle walked up and down the room, as though struggling with himself.
"Don't tear up your exercise book, though," he said to Gavrila at last. "Wait a little and stay here. You may perhaps be wanted. My dear," he went on, turning to me, "I think I was too noisy just now. Everything must be done with dignity and manliness, but without shouting and insulting people. Do you know what, Seryozha? Wouldn't it be better if you were to go out? It will be just the same to you. I will tell you all about it later on, eh? What do you think? Do that for my sake, please."
"Are you frightened, Uncle? Are you repenting?" I said, looking at him intently.
"No, no, my dear boy, I am not repenting," cried my uncle with redoubled earnestness. "I am afraid of nothing now. I have taken decisive steps, the most decisive. You don't know, you can't imagine what they have demanded of me. Ought I to consent? No, I will show them. I have made a stand against them, and I will show them. I was bound to show them sooner or later. But you know, my dear boy, I am sorry I sent for you. It will be very hard, perhaps, for Foma, if you are here, so to say, the witness of his humiliation. You see, I want to turn him out of the house in a gentlemanly way, without humiliating him at all. Though, indeed, it is only a form of words to say, without humiliation. Oh, the position is such, my boy, that however honeyed one's speech is, it will still be insulting. I am coarse, uneducated, perhaps. I may do something in my foolishness that I may regret later. Anyway, he has done a great deal for me. Oh, go away, my dear. Here, they are bringing him. Seryozha, I entreat you, go away. I will tell you all about it afterwards. For Christ's sake, go away.
And Uncle led me out onto the veranda at the very moment when Foma walked into the room. But I must confess I did not go away. I made up my mind to stay on the veranda, where it was very dark, and so it was difficult to see me from within. I made up my mind to play the eavesdropper. I do not justify my action, but I can boldly say that I consider I performed an heroic feat in standing that whole half hour on the veranda without losing patience. From my position, I could not only hear well, but could even see well. The doors were of glass. I now beg the reader to imagine Foma Fomitch, after he had been commanded to come, and threatened with force if he refused.
"Can my ears have heard that aright, Colonel?" cried Foma, entering the room. "Was that your message?"
"Yes, Foma, yes. Calm yourself," my uncle answered valiantly. "Sit down. We must have a little serious, friendly talk, like brothers. Sit down, Foma."
Foma Fomitch majestically sat down on a low chair. My uncle walked about the room with rapid and uneven steps, evidently puzzled how to begin.
"Like brothers, precisely," he repeated. "You understand me, Foma. You are not a boy. I am not a boy either. In fact, we are both getting on. You see, Foma, we don't get on together on certain points. Yes, on certain points, precisely. And so, Foma, would it not be better to part? I am convinced that you are a generous man, that you wish me well, and so... But why prolong the discussion? Foma, I am your friend now and always, and I swear that by all the saints. Here are 15,000 roubles in silver. It's all I have to bless myself with. I have scraped together every farthing. I have robbed my own children. Take it boldly. I ought, it is my duty, to secure your future. It's almost all in banknotes and very little in cash. Take it boldly. You owe me nothing, for I shall never be able to repay you for all you have done for me. Yes, yes, precisely. I feel that, though now we are in disagreement over the most important point, tomorrow, or the day after, or when you like, let us part. Drive to our little town, Foma. It is not 8 miles away. There, behind the church, in the first side street, there is a little house with green shutters, a charming little house belonging to the widow of a priest, that looks as though it had been built for you. She is selling it, and I will buy it for you, in addition to this money. Settle there, near us. Work at literature. Study science. You will win fame. The officials there are gentlemanly, agreeable, disinterested men. The head priest is learned. You shall come and stay with us for the holidays, and we shall all live as in paradise. Will you? So these are the terms on which Foma is to be kicked out, I thought. Uncle did not say a word to me about money. For a long time, a profound silence reigned. Foma sat in his easy chair as though struck dumb, gazing fixedly at my uncle, who was evidently becoming uncomfortable from that silence and that stare.
"The money," Foma articulated at last in an affectedly faint voice. "Where is it? Where is that money? Give it me. Give it here at once."
"Here it is, Foma. Everything I have to the last farthing, just 15,000. Here are notes and securities you can see for yourself. Here."
"Gavrila, take that money," Foma said mildly. "It may be of use to you, old man." "But no!"
he cried all at once, raising his voice to an extraordinary squeal and leaping up from his chair.
"No, give me that money first, Gavrila. Give it to me. Give it me. Give me those millions, that I may trample them underfoot. Give them to me, that I may tear them to pieces, spit on them, fling them away, spurn them, scorn them. They offer money to me. To me? They try to buy me to leave this house. Have I heard that? Have I lived to see this last ignominy? Here they are. Here are your millions. Look, there, 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 there. That is how Foma Episkin behaves, if you did not know it before, Colonel."
And Foma threw the whole roll of notes about the room. It was noticeable that he did not tear or spit on one of the notes, as he had boasted of doing. He only crumpled them a little, and even that rather carefully. Gavrila flew to pick up the notes from the floor, and later on, after Foma's departure, he carefully restored them to his master. Foma's action produced an overwhelming impression upon my uncle. In his turn, he now stood facing him, immovably, senselessly, open-mouthed. Foma, meanwhile, had replaced himself in his armchair and was panting as though from unutterable agitation.
"You are a man of lofty feelings, Foma," my uncle cried out at last, recovering himself. "You are the noblest of men."
"I know it,"
Foma answered in a faint voice, but with ineffable dignity.
"Foma, forgive me. I have been a mean wretch to you, Foma."
"Yes, to me," Foma assented.
"Foma, it is not your disinterestedness that I marvel at," my uncle went on enthusiastically, "but that I could have been so coarse, blind, and mean as to offer you money in such circumstances. But, Foma, you are mistaken about one thing. I was not bribing you. I was not paying you for leaving this house, but just simply I wanted you to have money that you might not be in straits when you leave me. I swear that. On my knees, I'm ready to beg your forgiveness, Foma, and if you like, I'm ready to go down on my knees before you this moment, if you wish me to."
"I don't want your kneeling, Colonel."
"But my God, Foma, consider. You know I was carried away, overwhelmed. I was not myself. But do tell me, do say in what way I may be able to efface this insult. Instruct me, admonish me."
"In no way, in no way, Colonel. And rest assured that tomorrow morning I shall shake the dust from off my boots on the threshold of this house."
And Foma began to get up from his chair. My uncle rushed in horror to make him sit down again.
"No, Foma, you will not go away, I assure you," cried my uncle. "It is no use talking about dust and boots, Foma. You are not going away, or I will follow you to the utmost ends of the earth, and I will follow you till such time as you forgive me. I swear it, Foma, and I will do it.
Forgive you? You are to blame, said Foma. But do you yet understand the wrong you have done me? Do you understand that even the fact that you have given me a piece of bread here has become a wrong to me now? Do you understand that now, in 1 minute, you have poisoned every morsel I have tasted in your house? You reproached me just now with those morsels, with every mouthful of the bread I have eaten. You have shown me now that I have been living like a slave in your house, like a flunky, like a rag to wipe your polished boots. And yet I, in the purity of my heart, imagined up to now that I was residing in your house as a friend and a brother. Did you not yourself in your snake-like speeches assure me 1,000 times of that brotherly relation? Why did you mysteriously weave for me the snare in which I have been caught like a fool? Why have you dug in the darkness this wolf-pit into which you have yourself thrust me now? Why did you not strike me down with 1 blow before? Why did you not wring my neck at the very beginning like a cock because he, well, for instance, simply because he doesn't lay eggs? Yes, that's just it. I stick to that comparison, Colonel, though it is taken from rustic life and recalls the trivial tone of modern literature. I stick to it because one sees in it all the senselessness of your accusation. For I am as much in fault as this supposititious cock who displeases his frivolous owner by not laying eggs. Upon my word, Colonel, does one pay a friend, a brother, with money? And what for? That's the point. What for? Here, my beloved brother, I am indebted to you. You have even saved my life. Here are a few of Judas's silver pieces for you. Only get away out of my sight. Oh, how naive, how crudely you have behaved to me. You thought that I was thirsting for your gold, while I was cherishing only the heavenly feeling of securing your welfare. Oh, how you have broken my heart! You have played with my finest feelings like some wretched boy with a ninepin. Oh, long, long ago, Colonel, I foresaw all this. That is why I have long choked over your bread. I have been suffocated by your bread. That is why your feather beds have stifled me. They have stifled me instead of lulling me to slumber. That is why your sugar, your sweetmeats, have been cayenne pepper to me and not sweetmeats. No, Colonel, live alone. Prosper alone, and let Foma go his sorrowful way with a wallet on his back. So it shall be, Colonel.
No, Foma, no, it shall not be so. It cannot be so,
moaned my uncle, utterly crushed.
Yes, Colonel, yes, so it shall be, for so it must be. Tomorrow I shall depart from you. Scatter your millions. Strew all my way, all the high road to Moscow with your banknotes, and I will walk proudly and scornfully over your notes. This very foot, Colonel, will trample your notes into the mud and crush them. For Foma Opiskin, the nobility of his own soul will be enough. I have said it, and I have shown it. Farewell, Colonel, farewell.
And Foma began getting up from his chair.
Forgive me, Foma, forget it,
repeated my uncle in an imploring voice.
Forgive you? Why, what use will my forgiveness be to you? Why, supposing I do forgive you, I am a Christian. I cannot refuse to forgive. I have almost forgiven you already. But consider yourself. Is it in the least consistent with common sense and gentlemanly feeling for me to stay 1 minute longer in your house? Why, you have turned me out of it.
It is consistent. It is consistent, Fomar. I assure you that it is consistent.
It is? But are we equals now? Don't you understand that I have, so to speak, crushed you by my generosity, and you have crushed yourself by your degrading action? You are crushed, and I am uplifted. Where is the equality? Is friendship possible without equality? I say this, uttering a cry of lamentation from my heart, and not triumphing, not exalting myself over you, as you perhaps imagine.
But I am uttering a cry of lamentation from my heart, too, Fomar, I assure you.
And this is the man,
Fomar went on, changing his severe tone for a sanctimonious one,
this is the man for whom I so often kept vigil at night. How many times on my sleepless nights have I arisen from my bed, have lighted a candle and said to myself, "Ah, now he is sleeping peacefully, trusting in you. Do not you, Fomar, sleep. Be valiant for him. Maybe you will think of something more for the welfare of that man." That is what Fomar thought on his sleepless nights, Colonel. And this is how that Colonel has repaid him. Oh, but enough, enough!
But I will deserve your friendship again, Fomar. I will deserve it, I swear to you.
You will deserve it? Where is the guarantee? As a Christian, I will forgive you and even love you, but as a man and a gentleman, I shall not be able to help despising you. I must. I am bound to, in the name of morality, because, I repeat it, you have disgraced yourself, while my action has been most high-minded. Why, who out of your set would perform such an action? Would any one of them refuse an immense sum of money which poor, destitute Fomar, despised by all, has refused from devotion to true greatness? No, Colonel. To be on a level with me, you must perform now a regular series of heroic deeds. And what are you capable of when you cannot even address me as your equal, but call me Fomar, like a servant?
Fomar? Oh, but I call you so from affection, wailed my uncle. I did not know you disliked it. Oh, my God, if I had only known!
You, Fomar pursued, you who could not, or rather would not grant the most insignificant, the most trivial request when I asked you to address me like a general as Your Excellency.
But, Fomar, you know that is really, so to say, high treason, Fomar.
High treason? You have learned some phrase out of a book and repeat it like a parrot. But do you know, you put me to shame, covered me with ignominy by your refusal to call me Your Excellency. You covered me with ignominy because, without understanding my reasons, you made me look a capricious fool worthy of a madhouse. Why do you suppose I don't understand that I should have been ridiculous if I had wanted to be styled Excellency? I, who despise all these ranks and earthly grandeurs, insignificant in themselves if they are not lighted up by virtue. For a million, I would not accept the rank of general without virtue. And meanwhile, you looked upon me as a madman. It was for your benefit I sacrificed my pride and allowed you, to be able to look upon me as a madman, you and your learned gentlemen. It was solely in order to enlighten your mind, to develop your morals, and to shed upon you the light of new ideas that I made up my mind to demand from you a general's title. I wanted you, for the future, not to regard generals as the highest luminaries on this earthly sphere. I wanted to show you that rank is nothing without greatness of soul, and that there is no need to rejoice at the arrival of your general, when there are, perhaps, standing at your side, people made illustrious by virtue. But you have so constantly prided yourself before me on your rank of colonel that it was hard for you to say to me, Your Excellency. That was the root of it. That was where one must look for the reason, and not in any breach of the decrees of Providence. The whole reason is that you are a colonel, and I am simply Fomer.
No, Fomer, no, I assure you that it is not so. You are a learned man, you are not simply Fomer. I respect you.
You respect me? Good. Then tell me, since you respect me, what is your opinion? Am I worthy of the rank of a general, or am I not? Answer at once and straightforwardly. Am I or not? I want to see your intelligence, your development.
For honesty, for disinterestedness, for intelligence, for lofty nobility of soul, you are worthy of it, my uncle brought out with pride.
Well, if I am worthy of it, why will you not say, Your Excellency, to me?
Fomo, I will, perhaps.
But I insist. And I insist now, Colonel. I require it and insist. I see how hard it is for you. That is why I insist. That sacrifice on your side will be the first step in your moral victory, for, don't forget it, you will have to gain a series of moral victories to be on a level with me. You must conquer yourself, and only then I shall feel certain of your sincerity.
Tomorrow, then, I will call you, Your Excellency, Fomer.
No, not tomorrow, Colonel. Tomorrow can take care of itself. I insist that you, now, at once, address me as Your Excellency.
Certainly, Fomer, I am ready. Only, what do you mean by at once, Fomer?
Why not at once? Or are you ashamed? That's an insult to me, if you are ashamed.
Oh, well, if you like, Fomer, I am ready. I am proud to do so, indeed. Only it's queer, Fomer, apropos of nothing. Good day, Your Excellency. You see, one can't.
No, not good day, Your Excellency. That's an offensive tone. It is like a joke, a farce. I do not permit such jokes with me. You forget yourself, Colonel. You forget yourself. Change your tone.
And you are not joking, Fomer?
In the first place, I am not Fomer, Yegor Ilyich, and don't you forget it. I am Fomer Fomich.
Oh, Fomer Fomich. I am delighted, really. I am altogether delighted. Only, what am I to say?
You are puzzled what to add to the phrase, Your Excellency. That I understand. You should have explained yourself long ago. It is excusable indeed, especially if a man is not a literary character, to put it politely. Well, I will help you, since you are not a literary character. Repeat after me, Your Excellency.
Well, Your Excellency.
No, not well, Your Excellency, but simply, Your Excellency. I tell you, Colonel, you must change your tone. I hope, too, that you will not be offended if I suggest that you should make a slight bow, and at the same time bend forward, expressing in that way respectfulness and readiness, so to say, to fly on his errands. I have been in the Society of Generals myself, and I know all that, so then, Your Excellency...
Your Excellency.
How inexpressibly delighted I am that I have at last an opportunity of asking your forgiveness for not having recognized from the first moment Your Excellency's soul. I make bold to assure you that I will not, for the future, spare my poor efforts for the public welfare. Well, that's enough.
Poor uncle. He had to repeat all this rigmarole, phrase by phrase, word by word. I stood and blushed as though I were guilty. I was choking with rage.
"Well, don't you feel now," the torturer went on, "that your heart is suddenly lighter, as though an angel had flown into your soul? Do you feel the presence of that angel? Answer."
"Yes, Foma, I certainly feel more at ease," answered my uncle.
"As though, after you have conquered yourself, your heart were, so to say, steeped in holy oil?"
"Yes, Foma, certainly it all seems, as it were, in butter."
"As it were in butter? I wasn't talking of butter, though. Well, never mind. You see, Colonel, the value of a duty performed. Conquer yourself. You are vain, immensely vain."
"I see I am, Foma," my uncle answered with a sigh.
"You are an egoist, and indeed a gloomy egoist."
"An egoist I am, it is true, Foma, and I see it. Ever since I have come to know you, I have learned to know that, too."
"I am speaking to you now like a father, like a tender mother. You repel people and forget that a friendly calf sucks two mothers."
"That is true, too, Foma."
"You are coarse. You jar so coarsely upon the human heart, you so egoistically insist upon attention, that a decent man is ready to run from you to the utmost ends of the earth."
My uncle heaved another deep sigh.
"Be softer, more attentive, more loving to others. Forget yourself for the sake of others, then they will think of you. Live and let others live. That is my rule. Suffer, labour, pray and hope. Those are the truths which I would like to instil into all mankind at once. Model yourself on them, and then I shall be the first to open my heart to you. I shall weep on your bosom, if need be. As it is always I, and my gracious self with you. But, you know, one may get sick at last of your gracious self, if you will allow me to say so."
"A sweet-tongued gentleman," Gavrila brought out, awestruck. "That's true, Foma. I feel all that,"
my uncle assented, deeply touched.
"But I am not altogether to blame, Foma. I've been brought up like this. I have lived with soldiers, but I swear, Foma, I have not been without feeling. When I said good-bye to the regiment, all the hussars, all my division, simply shed tears and said they would never get another like me. I thought at the time that I, too, was not altogether a lost soul."
"Again a piece of egoism. Again I catch you in vanity. You are boasting, and at the same time reproaching me with the hussar's tears. Why don't I boast of anyone's tears? And yet there may have been grounds, there may have been grounds for doing so."
"I meant nothing, Foma. It was a slip of the tongue. I couldn't help remembering those old happy times."
"Happy times do not fall from heaven. We make them ourselves. It lies in our hearts, Yegor Ilyich. That is why I am always happy, and in spite of my sufferings, contented, tranquil in spirit, and am not a burden to anyone unless it is to fools, upstarts, and learned gentlemen, on whom I have no mercy and don't care to have. I don't like fools. And what are these learned gentlemen? A man of learning, and his learning turns out to be nothing but a hoaxing trick, and not learning. Why, what did he say just now? Let him come here. Let all these men of learning come here. I can refute them all. I can refute all their propositions. I say nothing of greatness of soul.
Of course, Fomar, who doubts it?
This afternoon, for instance, I showed intelligence, talent, colossal erudition, knowledge of the human heart, knowledge of contemporary literature. I showed and displayed in a brilliant fashion how some wretched Komarinsky may furnish a lofty topic of conversation for a man of talent. And did any one of them appreciate me as I deserved? No. They turned away. Why, I am certain he has told you already that I know nothing, and yet perhaps Machiavelli himself or some Mercadante was sitting before him and only to blame for being poor and in obscurity. That does not penetrate to them. I hear of Korovkin, too. What sort of queer fish is he?
He is a clever man, Fomar, a man of learning. I am expecting him. He will certainly be a nice man, Fomar.
I doubt it. Most likely some modern ass laden with books. There is no soul in them, Colonel, no heart in them. And what is learning without virtue?
No, Fomar, no. How he talked of family happiness. The heart feels it of itself, Fomar.
We will have a look at him. We will examine Korovkin, too. But enough, Fomar concluded, getting up from his easy chair. I cannot altogether forgive you yet, Colonel. The insult was too deadly. But I will pray, and perhaps God will shed peace on the wounded heart. We will speak further of this tomorrow, but now permit me to withdraw. I am tired and exhausted.
Oh, Fomar, cried my uncle in a fluster. Why, of course you are tired. I say, won't you have something to support you, a snack of something? I will order something at once.
A snack?
answered Fomar with a contemptuous laugh.
First they offer you a drink of poison, and then they ask you if you won't have a snack of something. They want to heal the wounds of the heart with stewed mushrooms or pickled apples. What a pitiful materialist you are, Colonel.
Oh, Fomar, I spoke in all simplicity.
Oh, very well. Enough of that. I will withdraw, and you go at once to your mother. Fall on your knees, sob, weep, but beg for her forgiveness. That is your duty. That is a moral obligation.
Oh, Fomar, I have been thinking of nothing but that all the time. Even now, while I have been talking to you, I have been thinking of it. I am ready to implore her on my knees till dawn. But only think, Fomar, what they are expecting of me. Why, you know it's unjust, Fomar, it's cruel. Be entirely magnanimous, make me completely happy, think a little, decide, and then, I swear.
No, Yegor Ilyich, no, it's no business of mine, answered Fomar. You know that I do not meddle in the slightest degree in all that. You may be persuaded that I am at the bottom of it all, but I assure you that from the very beginning I have held entirely aloof from this affair. It is solely the desire of your mother, and she, of course, wishes for nothing but your good. Go to her, Make haste, fly, and rectify the position by your obedience, and let not the sun go down upon your wrath, while I shall be all night long praying for you. I have known no sleep for many a night, Yegor Ilyich. Good night. I forgive you, too, old man, he said, turning to Gavrila. I know you did not do it of yourself. You forgive me, too, if I have offended you. Good night. Good night, all, and may the Lord bless you.
Foma went out. I rushed at once into the room.
You've been listening, cried my uncle.
Yes, uncle, I have been listening. And you could call him Your Excellency.
What could I do, brother? Indeed, I am proud of it. That was no great act of sacrifice. But what a noble, what a disinterested, what a great man! Sergei, why, you heard yourself. And how I could thrust that money on him, I simply don't understand. Oh, my dear, I was carried away. I was in a rage. I did not understand him. I suspected him. I accused him. But no, he could not be antagonistic to me. I see that now. And do you remember what a noble expression there was on his face when he was refusing the money?
Very well, uncle. You can be as proud as you like, but I am going. My patience is at an end. For the last time I say it, tell me what you want of me. Why did you send for me, and what do you expect? And if it is all over, and I am of no use to you, then I'm going. I can't endure such exhibitions. I am going this very day.
My dear,
my uncle was in a fluster, as usual.
Only wait 2 minutes. I am going now, dear boy, to Mama to settle there. A grave, important, immense question. And you, meanwhile, go to your room. Here, Gavrila will take you to the summer lodge. You know the summer lodge. It is in the garden. I have given orders, and your trunk has been taken there, and I'm going in to beg forgiveness and settle one question. I know now what to do, and then I will be with you in a flash, and then I'll tell you everything. I'll open my whole soul to you, and happy days will come for us too sometime. 2 minutes, only 2 minutes, Sergei.
He pressed my hand and hurriedly went out. There was nothing to be done. I had to go off with Gavrila again.